Welcome to the Practice Podcast, conversations probing the nature of practice. I'm your host, Dave Fearon.
Well, folks, I am bringing you from my experience one of the very first artificial intelligence builders that I've come across in the practice spectrum. And it is definitely a practice that's hot and growing in leaps and bounds and creating a lot of change in our lives, seemingly overnight, but it's actually been coming along for decades. And Alexander and his team have come up with their first application, and I know there will be many more, which is a clip, a minute or so long, that can be made by extracting the text or the actual recording of a podcast or a book and creating a very creative and eye-catching and intriguing replication of what those words are in image form. So you see colors and lights and music and narration all happening at once. During this conversation with Alexander, I said, you know, this sounds to me like opera, what you have here, because it's all there, the light, the sound, the action, the storytelling, all there for people to absorb, hopefully minute by minute. So this will be hopefully not just the last conversation I have with Alexander, because I want to see how their business is doing after they do graduate and find the right place to incubate this business and make something wonderful in the world. A very fine young man, Alexander Lipetko.
All right.
Well, this is a lot of fun for me because, as some might know, listening to my series, I used to work at a college, or a lot of colleges actually, and when I have a chance to find a current but soon to graduate college student, I latch right on. And in this case, it's with Alex Lipetko. Is that correct? It took a while.
Pretty much. Got it. Yeah.
I've tried four or five versions of Alex's name, but it's a very nice name, which I shouldn't continue experimenting with. But speaking of experiments, the reason that I did connect with Alex is, and I can't remember, maybe you will, Alex, I found that he is working with a team to bring a artificial intelligence into the realm of catching our eyes on social media. Now, once the eyes are caught, Alex, I guess after that goes the mind, and then the action becomes, hey, I think I'd like to read Fearon's book or whatever the thing is we're expounding on. So what is the name at the moment of your emerging company that's going to be using artificial intelligence for this purpose?
Yeah, well, thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate this opportunity to learn from you and also maybe get some of my ideas out there.
Yep.
So I really appreciate it. But yeah, we are called Fire Clips right now. That's our current name.
Fire Clip. What's the symbolism? Clip, I get, because that's what you make. You make clips out of actual text or even pictures. But what's the fire part?
So fire is actually just a Gen Z slang. We'll say, you know, instead of that's cool, or I like that, we'll say, oh, that's fire. Like, especially when commenting on videos or, you know, social media posts. So yeah, we thought it was funny. However, when I go to present it, sometimes it's hard to have a straight face and say, we are Fire Clips, knowing the connotation. So
yeah, but only people under 40 will know, or maybe even under 30 will know the fire reference. But you know, it is important, as you know, in this work you're doing, to get a little bit of a reaction, get a bit of a quick spurt of what, or a giggle or a laugh. But of course, ultimately, you want to be taken seriously because you want to form this into a startup after you, well, it's already started up, but after you graduate. So, Alex, before we get into the nitty and the gritty of this really interesting process that you and your team have created, give me a little bit of history of where this idea to enter into artificial intelligence began for you and your teammates.
I might not be able to speak about my teammates. I'm not too sure what piqued their interest. But I would say most computer science students are fascinated by AI. It's kind of the pinnacle of computer science, because what we're trying to do when we create software is automation and automate different tasks at massive scale. So the ultimate automation would be to create one computer program that can complete any task. And you would just give it some command and it will complete that task for you, get to the end of your goal, achieve your goal. And that's essentially what AI is. A computer program do anything. So I think if you have a knack for software and computer programming, you will automatically gravitate towards artificial intelligence, because it's that ultimate satisfaction of creating something that does a ton of work for you in seconds and can be nearly infinitely scaled, which means it can be copy and pasted into, you know, any mobile device, any computer across the world, and run. It's almost like replicating yourself when you create a software program.
Yeah.
So that's what drew me to
it. In a way, it carries your personality. If you, not if, but as you have some influence on writing that particular code and creating that aspect of what is evolving, you don't get to sign it, I guess, you know, like created by Alexander, but in a way, you know that you're part of that movement that will be out there when your nice brown hair looks like my very white hair about 40 years from now or 60 years from now. So what about that as a marker of your practice in the world?
Yeah, I think software actually is something that's evolving so fast and is constantly being iterated upon that most software created will be irrelevant in maybe 5 to 10 years. Especially if you're creating in an area that is very important or high value. It's almost like the more high value the area is, the more innovation that will take place in that area.
Yeah.
Because it's so easy to improve software, it's easy to phase out old things. And we're constantly in a cycle of kind of death and rebirth. However, there are many programs out there that stayed around, you know, many programming languages. It's more the tools that have real longevity, but the products and the more user-facing, client-facing solutions are constantly being, you know, like a snake shedding its skin, or that parable, or not a parable, that story of the boat where, you know, each piece of wood is being replaced along the way. And eventually when the boat
to keep it floating.
Or I think it was more that, so a boat leaves from, let's say, Europe and sets sail for North America. And as they go, each wooden board in the boat is replaced with a new one because it, you know, it rots, or, you know, they need to replace it. And by the end of their journey, when they arrive, the boat is completely replaced with new wood. And then the question becomes, is that the same boat? And
Yes.
And so software is quite similar to that.
So you may get at best a plank out of the work you're doing right now, but it will be replaced.
Or maybe the silhouette of a boat, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or the purpose of a boat.
Yeah.
Which gradually has been rendered nearly obsolete regarding at least passenger transportation, because now you can fly, you know, from the States to Paris in 7 hours or 6 hours. And so the 3 week boat trip is now just called a cruise. But it wasn't that long ago when your grandparents would probably only be able to travel by boat if they came from Eastern Europe, which I assume your last name reflects, or maybe your great grandparents. But so you're part of all of innovation of all sorts in a way, but your timing is quite interesting, because I have a friend who I meet with every Wednesday night via Zoom. He's been a software engineer for maybe 50 years. And he was one of the very first to understand machine learning. And later when he worked in Cambridge, Mass, you know, he had a lot of different projects that put it into effect. But it took him sometime years to write the code and get it all tuned up to work, to do something as simple as remember an equation. I mean, it was very much the start of this whole thing. So now he's retired and enjoying doing many other things. But when he was doing that, he almost essentially burned himself out because it was so demanding and he could not sleep. Sometimes he would be trying to rest and in his mind would say, oh, I got to change this, I got to tweak that. So warning, if you get into this much deeper, Mr. Computer Scientist, you may want to be careful not to burn out.
Oh yeah, and I've already experienced that or faced that. A lot of the times it feels like sometimes I'll be watching myself build the thing, and it feels like there's an external force that's using me as a conduit to exist, as odd as that sounds. And yeah, it's almost an addiction, keeps you up at night. You are just constantly thinking about this idea, seeing the world through the lens of the idea. Yeah, so I resonate with that.
And it needs your mind, and it needs your fingers to type and to run a mouse. Okay. It being this program that I'm going to ask you about in a second, so you can do some real bragging. But in one or more of the podcast episodes of the 258 that I posted, I've had passionate authors, in the same way you're describing it. And one of them said, to the point you just made, I didn't write the book. The book wrote me. I said, what? He said, yeah. He said, there was a book and it needed to be written, and I became its convenient servant. And it's a good book. I bought it. So it did. The book did its job in finding the right person. So what, among all the programs I'm sure have moved you and you've experimented with, what about the program that FireClip is using at this moment making you write it and develop it and get it out to the world?
Very good question. I think for me, it starts very young. And I feel like throughout my entire childhood, I had this feeling of having to fight or wrestle with technology to live my life and actually do what I wanted to do. And I feel that much of software that's created, at least like consumer software, is designed to be addictive. And you know, there's all these companies where they'll study casinos, and you know, there's like a lab in Las Vegas where they have a fake casino where they test new ideas, and guess who's working in there and have scientists in there? You know, Facebook, Snapchat, TikTok.
Yeah. Right.
So my entire life, I've had this real susceptibility to getting lost when it comes to the internet, you know, getting, feeling like I can't get my own time away, and I'm being controlled and manipulated by these algorithms that are created by such intelligent people, billion-dollar companies, trillion-dollar companies, actually now, pouring their money into keeping you addicted and keeping your eyeballs on their platform.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I really want to do is build digital counterweights to that.
Mm.
Try and be a force for using those systems to better people's lives. Because I think right now, most of the content we consume on these platforms is either not benefiting us or even self-destructive sometimes. You know, it's giving us anxiety. It's giving people body image issues. The list, I could go on and on. And so what I want to do is utilize the new advancements in what they call generative AI technology. So being able to generate images, videos, scripts, going from text to voice or speech quite easily. I want to utilize this all to make intellectual, healthy, productive, insightful content as entertaining as possible.
Mm.
That people will be addicted to that rather than, you know, all of the pointless, crazy videos that are out there right now.
So what I'm hearing here is that it's not just the artificial intelligence that you're manipulating. It's the mission to have your own version of content that is enriching, developmental, growthful. And the only way to get some people to sort of take, eat their vegetables of that sort is to make them entertaining. You know, like putting faces on the tomato to get the, and I don't want to be making fun of a very serious intent that you have, but I get the entertainment part to get to the rest, because one of the addictive qualities of the TikToks and all the reels and everything is that it's somewhat entertaining, maybe just by chance, because a lot of them are just people doing stupid stuff and make us laugh. So talk about how you and your team have fulfilled this vision so far, so that there is that eye holding of the eye, but also the entertaining aspect of it.
Yeah. So right now we're creating a program where you upload an audio file or a text file. And from there, we find interesting images from the internet, or we generate them using an AI service called DALL-E 3. And then we string them all together. We have a AI that curates the different times the images will be displayed, so they're relevant to what people are talking about.
Mm.
You add some animation to them to make it more visually stimulating and interesting. And then we also add subtitles and music. So we're really trying to just hit as many senses as possible. If we could add smell, I'd add smell. That'd be cool. Taste, maybe taste a video in the future.
It will be there. It'll happen, whether people want it or not. So there's another kind of dimension to this work that I'm hearing then, Alex, and that is its design of a artistic nature. Because in a way, you're creating something like a very, very brief opera. Because if you think of an opera, it has the music, it has the action, it has captions, because I need them now when I go see an opera, has action, and it And each, unless it's an old, old opera, each scene is very quick. You know, they shift quickly with what's going on to keep us old people from falling asleep. So, but to be serious about it, there's a orchestration that you and your team have to do to have it emerge with all those elements working simultaneously, particularly, and I've noticed it in the clips you shared with me, the timing of the words of the sentiment with the pictures. That's pretty remarkable that it comes out that way.
Yeah, I think there's a very long way to go, and I want to add many more layers of AI to create more stimulating effects, mesmerizing effects, entertaining effects. However, I think where we're at right now is a huge gain from, you know, really just showing an audio track with a picture of the person who's talking. I think the dynamicness and having relevant imagery is fun to watch, you know, and I think we're gaining more and more data each week to support that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's really, really fun.
How are you gaining that data? Just by doing what you did with me and asking people to let you sample for them what they'd like to have happen on social media?
Yeah, exactly. We're just allowing people to share videos that we make for them. And they're doing very well, and people have been quite happy. So,
what are they seeing? What's the marker of a successful clip?
So, right now we have one podcast. They're called Before and After the Movies. I think that's the name, where they review a movie, or they don't review it. They discuss their expectations for a movie, then they watch it, and then review it. Hmm. And report the discussion and review. So really, really interesting concept. And for them, they never have posted videos before. And before on their podcast, they were getting, I think, somewhere from like 50 to 200 listens per episode.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've posted two of our videos now. The first one did 750 views. So that's already like a 7 times increase in their exposure. And then the second video has gotten, I think, 3,500 views now.
Wow.
So that's a massive increase in their exposure.
Wow. And how long does a video run with is it run concurrently with the podcast? Is it like the length of the podcast, or is it a clip like you've made for me?
Yeah. So they're short clips. Yeah. And that's really what the trend is nowadays, is to create short clips of your podcast that highlight interesting ideas. They're insightful, intriguing, maybe funny. Mm-hmm. And the real value proposition to a podcaster is these clips will generate leads and bring listeners in. Exactly.
Absolutely. Draw them in. Because there's a tad of competition out there for, let's say, for my podcast, something on the level of 100, 1,000, I don't know. I've lost any sense of how many podcasts are out there, except that almost everyone I come across now for my podcast says, well, I'll be on your podcast, but will you be on mine? You know, like, what? You got one too? So, and the answer is real. I mean, why not? It's a microphone, Zoom, and a couple of very simple, relatively inexpensive editing and posting tools for that part. So that piece is fine. And I can tell you right now, anyone would, it's a lot of time and work to find the person, arrange a date, have the conversation, edit the conversation, and to put it up there. And then I get my weekly summary of how many listens I get from through the Podomatic, which is the primary platform, and it goes out to Apple, Spotify, and all the rest. I go, what? You know, only 72 listens? So you have my attention, but you also have the attention of a whole bunch of other podcasters out there who aren't being fulfilled for all that effort until they get a sense that there's some ears and not only quick listens like to your clip, but say, oh, okay, I think I'll listen to the whole 30 minutes while I'm polishing my car, or while I'm, you know, one of the great things about podcasting is that once you put it in your ear, you can do it anywhere and do other stuff, just like the old radio days. What would I see if I looked at that before and after? What was it called again? Before and after the movies. Yeah. What would I see in the clip? Because I'll look for it after the call so I can see what your handiwork. But what did it look like?
So they're discussing this new movie came out called Roadhouse.
And oh yeah.
They're talking about how Conor McGregor sees himself as the next Stallone, and and then they did kind of an experiment. They were poking fun at it because I think their review of his acting was that it needed some improvement. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they were poking fun at that, and then talking about the different franchises that he might in the future play a role in. And so the images were of Conor McGregor, of the different, you know, Marvel, different movies, different characters from movies. So yeah, it really adds like a fun video element to it. Mm-hmm. And then also the music, they chose a song from the soundtrack, and the platform can add that, you know, easily to the video. So yeah, they had the music to match. They had a really good vibe in this video. There's lots of laughter. I think that's very important to mm-hmm. a good clip. It like, yeah, people want to watch something. You know, if a clip starts with people laughing, people are immediately intrigued because they want to laugh as well.
Yeah.
So
it's good insight. So you've had to learn quite a lot about human behavior, haven't you?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Why do people want to laugh? Well, there's some psychology there. What is the franchise environment for this? That's essentially sociology and economics, with a tad of the arts shaken in. So everything that you're putting in your clips, I think, could be parsed out in regard to the different thought disciplines, learning disciplines that a good liberal arts college works to combine on behalf of each of its graduates. So, but you had to get that way, because here's a stereotype. Oh, computer science, you're a nerd. Computer science, you just sit there with huge cans of energy drink and type faster than a hummingbird's fingers, wings can move. That's not you. You don't even look like a nerd.
Well, I identify as a nerd, and I'm proud to be one.
All right. Okay. I accept that.
But I can agree, I definitely don't look the part. Yeah, it's an interesting program, and it definitely has a culture of people who are much more interested in building things than their appearance, than their ego. Everyone is tied to their knowledge and skills rather than more kind of fleeting things, which is very cool.
Yeah, it's so that's the kind of folks that are attracted to this, to you and to this work. What are some of the fundamental skills that may be there long into the future that are necessary for you to do this work?
Hmm.
I was teasing about the typing, but maybe that's part of it.
So typing now, there's lots of keyboard shortcuts and autocomplete. So typing speed isn't a limiting factor, but it definitely used to be. And in my first year of computer science, I would practice typing, touch typing. And obviously you want to be able to hit all of the different keys without having to look. So,
oh yeah, hit the wrong key and you blow the whole program, right? I mean, you put the wrong symbol in, or you know. So, yeah. So you had to learn that. That's very basic.
Yeah, yeah. I would say that's definitely not the bottleneck skill that you require. I heard one person. His name is Tech Lead. He has a YouTube channel, and he's a bit of a crazy guy, but he'll have some really good points. And he said the basic skill you need to be a software developer is to be able to sit in front of a computer for hours and just figure things out.
Figure things out.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's truly it. If you have the ability to sit on a computer and just keep reading documentation or keep watching video tutorials until you have solved your problem, you can go very far in this world. And all of the knowledge you need to be a software developer is free and available online, which is quite interesting.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so the limiting factor is almost your resilience and just like, do you feel okay with just sitting in front of a computer and problem after problem popping up on your screen and then having this kind of grind, hustle mindset to just, no matter what happens, solve each problem until you have hit your goal?
Wow, that's really insightful. Wonderful coincidence. I just posted today featuring an episode with a professor in Switzerland named Martin Gutmann. And the quote, the clip that I made, the old-fashioned me, had him saying that, I said, well, is passion necessary and for what he calls the unseen leader? And he said, it could help, but really what is more important is one is obsessed with doing the work and will keep doing it until they get the result they seek. There's a little passion for that, but it goes beyond that. They just have to solve that problem. And that was his view of many of the people that we've missed as having created a lot of change in the world, because while the more passionate acting person is flouncing around and saying, look at me and I'm a hero, there are people like you who are just diligently problem solving in some domain or another. In yours, it's a domain that lends itself to being able to sit in front of a computer where you don't have to get out into a jungle or find other contexts. As I'm looking at my time, give me an example of one of those moments in recent time for you when you finally solved a particular problem.
The first thing that comes to mind is using this service called Amazon Web Service. So for people who don't know, Amazon, a massive chunk of their business is in what's called cloud hosting. Mm-hmm. And cloud is just a fancy word for the internet. It was like a rebrand for the internet. And if you host something on the cloud, it just means you have your software running on some server that's in the desert of California, mm-hmm. or somewhere like that. And other people are available to interact with your software through their computer anywhere in the world. So that's cloud hosting. And they are probably the gold standard, I would say, in terms of, you know, their technology. And if you want to host any big program online, usually the first place you go to is Amazon Web Services. So in order to get my program running and able to be used by other people and, you know, allow users to create these videos, I had to learn Amazon Web Services. And it is very frustrating. It is such a frustrating program. When you go on it, it's you're immediately struck with paralysis by analysis because they have about six good options for anything you want to do. Which is, you know, that's something they tell you in like basic retail stores. The reason why they don't have 16 colors per t-shirt is because you're going to be stuck choosing what shade of pink you would prefer. And then you'll leave the store and go, oh, let me sleep on it. And then you never make the purchase.
That's right.
So yeah, just figuring out, sifting through all of the different potential solutions. And then you have to just choose one, and then you have to learn it. You have to read this documentation, but the documentation doesn't make any sense, or, you know, it'll bring up a topic and then say, oh, if you want to learn this, you actually first need to learn about technology XYZ.
Oh, here's a link to that.
So then you click on the link, and then it says, oh, if you want to learn this, make sure you've read the following three documents. And then you click on one of those, and then it says, now we'll begin with the video. And then, you know, you're three layers of documents in, and then at that point you've forgotten in the first place what you were trying to learn. and yeah, so I just kept trying every single day, kept asking people who have gone before me and done similar things, and many of them weren't even able to recount how they did it. Because there are so many options, they had a very niche solution to their problem that wouldn't work for mine. So at the end of the day, just persistence and reading through this horribly boring documentation, and then also just going in and trying to use it and seeing what breaks, and then fixing the errors as they come.
Yeah, but the reading of the documentation, you know, that could get old very quickly. But what makes you want to continue, I think, from what you just said, is now I'm going to try something. Now I'm going to take a risk. See, click, click, follow the rule. Oh, hey, it worked. Eureka.
Yeah. And there's that is a very common experience for software developers, is that moment of that we call it fixing a bug. There's a bug with a problem in your code.
Yeah.
And it's always just a massive win and feels fantastic. But it might have taken 6 hours of contemplating if you're in the wrong field and hating your life and wondering how you got here, and, you know, until you hit that moment and you go, I love computer programming.
There is no social life involved there. Unless you can find someone else who also loves computer programming. No, there is probably some balance to your life, Alex. But, well, I think you are on to something big, not just for the company. Again, what was it called? Firefly?
Fire Clips.
I know, I'm teasing. Oh, no. And what does fire mean? Oh, that's fire. That's a fire. You got a fire idea going there, man. And I think it's you only have a few more problems to solve, like graduating, getting some capital, figuring out to live. And if you're with a team, which it sounds to me you must have, you got to can motivate each other to stay with it, right?
Totally.
Before you all go to work for an Amazon warehouse, which is okay too, but then you're cutting the amount of time you have to sit in front of a computer to a few hours at the dead of night. So last question, and we should do this more because you got a great story. What do you envision you're going to have to deal with as soon as you guys finish the name of the company, stop floating it, and put a stake in the ground? We're going to do this.
Well, I think we have decided we're going to do this. And right now, it's just a matter of time management. But yeah, once we're all graduated and don't have to worry about imposed deadlines and, you know, people forcing us to learn things in exchange for a piece of paper that will maybe give us a job someday.
Mm-hmm.
then we'll all have a lot more time to work on it. And what's really important is reaching out to a ton of customers and creating something people love.
Very early on. Yeah. A much larger sample kit, if you will. Like your story about the movie podcast or the practice podcast that you've helped me feature. Now, in order to be out there doing that, what about income? How do you finance that phase of your time until you start getting some chargeback and some nice revenue?
Yeah, so there's different approaches. One is to have maybe a part-time job, another is to have a full-time job and then work on it after hours. Another is to just burn through your savings. And then also a very good option is what they call startup incubators or yes. accelerators. And those are programs mostly based in the Silicon Valley, where they basically have built an institution that gives you funding and also all of these different experienced startup entrepreneurs and venture capitalists to help you grow your business, basically.
So it would be really cool if you could get your team. Well, you don't actually have to be there physically as a team, do you, these days?
Yeah, you don't. I still do hear many people recommend moving to San Francisco. That is the
place.
The Mecca for startups. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Do you think you might do that?
Yes. I would. That is my goal, to make it to San Francisco, have a company there, get funded, get into a incubator, and save the world.
Okay. Well, I'm going to hold you to that, sir.
Oh boy.
Because this world is in desperate need of saving. And I want your generation to reach the age that I reached with a great lot of positive experiences, including having a wonderful family and lots of good friends and all the other stuff that goes along with that. But you mentioned earlier in this conversation that the impetus is to be a builder, that you want to be a builder, in this case, a builder of these software experiences. And I would tell you that that's mainly what has made my life successful. And most of the people that I've hung out with, we don't just learn a course and then reproduce it. We pick up some theory, schmoosh it around a little bit, and then we start creating experiential learning activities for, in this case, business owners that gets them on the track of them learning along for themselves. So, fellow builder, Alexander
Litepla.
Hey, I grew up in Maine. We only had three last names. It was very easy. Biron, Smith, and Jones. You've done great work already. Congratulations on your impending graduation. And I'll be back with more clips for you to turn into your magical experiences. I want those 700 listeners, and then I want the 1,300, the 3,500. I'm hungry for listeners. Thank you.
Get you there. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Practice Podcast, conversations probing the nature of practice. If you'd like to hear more, go to Podomatic, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or YouTube. And please consider purchasing our book on practice as a way of being at mylibrary.world. It's a digital book with lots of features that you do not see in a conventional book. So once again, thank you, and I look forward to you listening again.